You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Yeah. Well, we could split it down the middle. We'll work it out.
We need to. I'm only partially facetious. My voice is just ragged.
You're dragging?
I say it's just ragged.
Ragged? Yeah.
Yeah. I've been using it over the top lately.
Oh, I can imagine. You do all kinds of speaking in the band and radio shows, and you're just a man on fire.
Seemingly.
I noticed something interesting about you that I hadn't picked up on before, that you grew up in the show business, and you were familiar with Michael Jackson and some of these other people.
Yep.
That might be interesting to focus on a little bit.
We can do anything. We can do anything you want to do.
We are live. I hope you
Some
know. We are live.
Well, it's relaxed. It's relaxed.
Are we alive?
You're live.
In when? He always does a countdown, so.
I already did the countdown. You're live.
You did the countdown. Did you do a countdown, Don?
I think
he's
three,
saying we're actually on the air.
2, 1.
No, he's pulling our legs. He likes to do that. He wants to see if he can get me to panic. Okay, I'm panicking. Okay. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. If you heard anybody talking before the show, that was not the Zany Mystic. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Guy Finley back to the show, who has just released his latest book, The Essential Laws of Fearless Living. Guy is the acclaimed author of The Secret of Letting Go and more than 35 other books and audio programs that have sold over 1 million copies in 18 languages worldwide. In addition, he has presented over 4,000 unique self-realization seminars to thousands of grateful students throughout North America and Europe over the past 25 years. He's also been a guest on over 600 television radio shows, including national appearances on, now hold on to your hats, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, NPR, Wisdom Network, and many, 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 many others. He is a faculty member at the Omega Institute, is featured in this new hit film, Beyond the Law of Attraction, and was the keynote speaker at the 10th International Conference of Science and Consciousness. If all of that is not enough, he is director of Life of
it's
Learning
enough.
Foundation.
It's enough.
Okay, let's get him on the show, and he can talk all about himself. And
yeah, no, I won't, but that's plenty. That's more than anyone needs to know.
Yeah, too much information, huh?
Yeah.
Well, welcome, Guy. How are you?
I'm good, Lance. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, it's nice to have you back on the show and to see that you've actually pumped out another book. I don't know how you do it,
but
you're like a magician. You wave a magic wand, and gee, there's another book that's just out. It's terrific.
I wish it was that easy.
Yeah. Well, of course, then there's the talking about the book. That's something else indeed. Well, it's a very good book, and there's a lot of wisdom and self-empowerment in there. How did you come about writing this one?
Well, you know, as we have spoken before, and I'm glad to refresh everybody in terms of, you know, why so many books over these years, when we work on ourselves and learn new things about ourselves, it's just a natural expression to want to clarify that work that you've done. And no, there is no better way, for me anyway, to make certain the understanding than to you know, punch it out, put it into intelligent, hopefully, sentences that create pictures and give myself, above all, you know, that I think that's probably an important idea, maybe, to get across. The work that, the body of work that I've done, I did for myself, for the purpose of coming to understand the things that I wanted to understand. And the benefit of that work, if anybody feels so, is that it became, you know, public, and that individuals were able to find helpful ideas from my own work.
Well, that's beautifully said, and I agree with you, because I know in my own writing experience, which is not as prolific as yours, that it's a tool. It's a wonderful tool, and you can see where you've been by where you're at. And even though my first book stands on its own, now I'm already getting ready to feel the urge to express something new, that, you know, new things have been discovered, and it just may be time to start typing at the old ivories again.
Yeah, I think it's a net. Look, you know, when you see something extraordinary, and you are inspired. I mean, that's the actual word. You're inspired by the kind of energy that comes with being in relationship with something more whole, something brighter, broader. It's just natural to want to clarify it and bring it in, its content, into a recognizable form beyond the insight or the impression. And I wouldn't know what else to do, frankly.
Well, one thing I'm going to want to ask you about tonight, which we might not have gotten into before, this might be a little more fun for you. I have some friends who collect all of the, they've been involved with show business for many years, and they collect a lot of, in the periphery, Lucille Ball and Bob Hope and lots of memorabilia, and I know that if I don't ask you about those people, and you were also new to Jackson 5, so that might be some provide some interesting dialogues. Maybe you would like to talk about to some of these people that you grew up with and what it was like.
Well,
and maybe not.
I'll volunteer some information about it. I want to keep it germane to why you and I are friends and talking together over the air.
Well,
I mean, of course. I grew up in a Hollywood family. My father was the Time Magazine Man of the Decade in the field of video. He essentially created the late night television talk show genre before Johnny Carson and Jack Parr. My dad introduced on television Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, Lionel Hampton. Gave Desi Arnaz Sr. his first band job on the West Coast. I ran with the children of these megastars. And as I grew up, I was, as far as I'm concerned, very lucky to have this unceasing contradiction that just never left me alone when seeing the men and women who, on one hand, are glorified and praised by our world as being the top of the top, and then to be around the people who are the top of the top and to be exposed directly to the torment that they live in, was not an eye-opener, but it was something saying, I want to understand why it is that men and women who have everything are such wrecks.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And so much of my own life follows tracks along with some of that. I wasn't directly involved in any way, but people that we knew were involved in show business and in the studios, and they would come up and talk about all these people, and yet there was so much alcoholism. There was also a lot of laughter, but there was a lot of sadness and unhappiness behind the scenes, and I think that's important to acknowledge that what we see today, like for instance, with Michael Jackson's death, he was not necessarily a happy person. And,
yes.
And your books point out that there is a higher path, there is a light that is important for us to get in touch with. And I think that's what I enjoy so much about your writing, is that you're continually pointing not to what was, but to what can be and what is, and
yes.
living it.
Yes, that's the essential thing. And I want to stress something. Look, it is natural for us as human beings to follow what we love. In fact, the most important thing a human being can do is to find something that he or she has a love for and give themselves to it. And the reason I'm making this statement is because I am not, in my statement earlier about these people and their lives, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with a successful show business life or any other successful life. But what I am saying is that when a man or a woman achieves certain things in this world, there comes a natural time where life itself comes along and says, okay, look, Desi, Lucy, Frank, Dean, Sammy, Liza, whoever you are, you set out to discover the truth of the gift you were given, and now you have manifested it. You have hopefully become a master in your field of comedy or music or composition. But everything that we are given to do in order to discover ourselves comes with a certain point at which what we have discovered no longer serves the need we have for the process of continuing to discover who we are. But in this world, what happens is that people become someone, and they remain that person at the cost of their own sanity, living with the fear and the resentment when people don't give them their proper respect, instead of recognizing, all right, look, life gave me this gift. I went along and developed it as best I could. But now life has come and it said, look, you know what? It's time for you to move on. It's time for you to discover other aspects of your own character that are not necessarily connected to your arts and crafts, but maybe have something to do with more philanthropic or philosophical relationships with other people, or maybe just time to be alone. Mm-hmm. But what happens, and it's across the board, is that when a man or a woman becomes successful in this world, they take the identity that comes with that success, and then for fear that there isn't anything else, remain a captive of the very thing that was supposed to liberate them. Mm-hmm. And that's where the drugs and alcohol come in, because it's part of trying to deal with a great emptiness that can't be answered by mm-hmm. what they have done and what they have become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's time to let go and allow God, allow the truth to bring to you the next generation of what it is possible for you to understand about your relationship with life.
Very well said. Very well said. And that has to do with overcoming our basic fears, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because basically everything that stops us is fear. We're afraid there's nothing around the corner. We're afraid that the talent has run out or the well has run dry and we don't know what to try because we think, well, all I can do is write, or all I can do is this, or all I can do is that. But many segue into, like you said, entirely different avenues. And at the very least, we can try to give back some of the some of what we have been so wonderfully blessed with in our lifetime.
Yes. And you know what? And even the proof of this is that there are a few artists, as long as we're talking about music, that mm-hmm. have continued to develop. They mm-hmm. don't repeat the same thing. They don't rehash or reconfigure old formats. They go on and they explore new genres because it's what interests them. And because they have a great love for it, many times the new genre becomes what the people and the public then support the artist for, and they go through a developing process with the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Can you see that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, you're a singer, aren't you?
Well, yes, for many years I recorded on Motown and RCA, but I really, you know, we've touched on something that I want to, if we can springboard, maybe
okay.
we can make this meaningful for the people listening, because, look, you take a, and I'm just going to pick people that I know, you
okay.
take a Sting, or you take a Billy Joel, or a James Taylor, you take some of these singer-songwriters who over the years have continually come up with a new way of expressing music. It isn't what they were, it's what they become through their own exploration. And then, because they change, they actually affect the listening public. And in a way, if it's intelligent music, it's good for the development of the general consciousness. Now, the same thing holds true for us as individuals. We may not think to ourselves that we are creators, because, you know, I'm a housewife, or I'm a man, and I've got a 9-to-5 job, and I work with four guys shoveling asphalt, or, you know, holding a flag for the state patrol. But the fact of the matter is that each of us is all the time being asked by life to take the next step in our own development. But we're literally unaware of how life asks us, because we have been taught by our culture, we're deeply conditioned to look at any moment of dissatisfaction we have with ourselves as proof that there's something wrong with us, or something wrong with the people we're hanging out with, that we should feel this way. But Lance, the fact of the matter is that as a man or woman grows, part of their growth includes dissatisfaction. Because that natural dissatisfaction is saying, I have explored the possibilities here of being in this place, doing these things, and acting out these kind of thoughts and feelings. The dissatisfaction I have due to the conflict I have maybe with people, my own unhappiness or sense of emptiness, is due to the fact that I no longer have an appropriate response to what life is presenting me with. I keep giving it the old answer, and life keeps saying, no, Guy, no, Lance, no, Don, no, whoever you are, the old answers don't work. Here's the proof. Your unhappiness is the proof the old answers don't work.
Yes.
Now, who I am at present is the same as my answers. You can't separate this level of self from the answers that it manifests. So what life is really saying is, Guy, this level of self has matured as far as it can go. You as a human being can go no further with this vehicle as it is with what it understands. And that's why you're experiencing the dissatisfaction, the sense of incompleteness, the inadequacy that you're feeling, because life is saying, time to let go of who and what you have been, so that I can give you something new through which to discover a whole new order of yourself through.
Wow. Well, you can't argue with that.
That does make sense, doesn't it, Lance?
It makes total sense. Yeah, absolutely. No kidding, it makes sense. I mean, it's the only thing that does make sense.
That's why it's so important to have right ideas, because when most of us feel angry or dissatisfied with our life, the usual response on our part is to turn around and resist the conditions that are revealing our nature to us. We blame the conditions we live in for what we feel, instead of thanking the conditions for revealing to us the nature that we should no longer embrace.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And our life is our greatest teacher, and all the signs and all the clues are right in front of us if we know how to interpret them. And then it's a matter of being willing to look at the truth.
That's it.
And be willing to make some changes as well.
Well, if you really see the truth, for example, let's just say, we'll pick an example, we'll create someone, although this applies to all of us in one way or another.
Okay.
Here I am, and I'm with a group of people, and, you know, someone says something, and it kind of bothers me. And I open my mouth one more time, and I kind of stir the pot a little bit, because I'm going to stand up, in quotes, for myself, and I'm not going to let people say things that I think are denigrating me. Now,
okay.
Let's say that I've been doing that for 40 years, because I have been, and that one day I get ready to do it, and I realize, you know what, I have been upset with people and getting people upset with me for 40 years about something that it never changes. No matter what I do, it doesn't change the way the other person treats me. In fact, the more I resist the other person, the more they persist with their behavior.
Okay.
Now, so one day, right in the middle of getting ready to do that, we'll just say this. Suddenly, I see that, you know what? What you just said, the problem with it isn't that you said it, but that something in me demands that you don't say those kind of things. In other words, and we're going to get to a key point here, what troubles us in any given moment is not the event itself, but the part of us that we are asleep to prior to that event that rises up instantaneously and resists what has happened. When we start recognizing that we can't get negative, it is impossible, listeners, for you to ever get negative without first resisting the event that you blame for your negativity, then we begin to gain our power back. And we gain our power by we stop giving it away. Because you see, if in fact it is my resistance to the way you act, it is my resistance to that news that is producing my fear or anger about it, then the real task is for me to discover the source of resistance within me instead of trying to change you or the world around me so that I can live momentarily anyway without this disturbance. It points the arrow back where it's meant to be, Lance, which we must pay attention to ourselves. We must recognize that all states of fear, worry, stress begin with an unconscious part of ourself that meets the moment unaware, is stirred by that moment, and then blames the moment for the unhappiness instead of realizing that the moment is simply revealed to me that I have brought forward with me into this moment the very nature of unhappiness itself. As that becomes clear, it's not hard. I have to stop being me. I don't try to become something else. I simply recognize that what I've been, how I've reacted, and how I look at others no longer serves my best interest. And that's the beginning of genuinely letting go.
Well, I just had one of those moments today.
Good.
Yeah, and it was an inescapable It was like hitting a brick wall in a car at 60 miles an hour.
Good.
And I simply couldn't get away from myself.
Yes.
And the fact that I had to change, that there was nothing about the situation that was going to ever alter. It was going to keep coming up.
Yes.
And the only thing that I could do was change my relationship to it by letting go.
Yes.
Yeah. And
you know what, Lance? See, most of us look at life, and we'll back up a little bit here.
All right.
Now, let's say that I've been running into walls for 15 years with a relationship or someone that abuses me or a certain attitude that I've got, and for 15 years I've been hating the wall.
Right.
And then one day I run into the wall so firmly that I realize, you know what, that wall wouldn't be there if I weren't the kind of man or woman that I am. I mean, literally, I can't separate my insistence from the crash that I just had.
Yeah.
Now, if I really see something like that, it up until that point, and I'm trying to get to this idea, there has been these mini crises, points where I call a crisis a close encounter of the truthful kind. It's when I can no longer lie to myself about the fact that what I call reality isn't real. That's what a crisis is. When my imagined nature, my ideas about life meet what life is actually doing.
Yeah.
So we push away life, and we push away life, and then one day we realize, especially if we've ever had a drug or alcohol problem or some kind of substance or abusive relationship, we realize, you know what, I can't go on like this, and something has to give, and what's going to give isn't going to be what I hoped it was, and then the crisis becomes full-blown. Now, yes or no, when we actually go through a crisis like that, where we reach the end of whatever it is possible for us to justify our way out of, lie to ourselves about, drink, travel, hate, whatever it is, and none of it works, and we're left with nothing to do but let go and surrender ourselves, do we not, Lance, exit moments like that a wiser, kinder, more compassionate, stronger human being?
I'd have to say unequivocally yes.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. In fact, anyone who's ever been through a crisis knows they did everything they could to avoid the very moment that was the most significant change that was made in their life.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right.
So here we are, and we actually are change avoiders. We think we want change, but we actually avoid it.
Right, right.
But life, in its compassion, in its intelligence, because of certain laws that are connected to the ultimate necessity for harmony, will never-endingly bring us back face-to-face to where it is something that is disharmonious in our nature, out of balance, unenlightened, dark if you want, not in a moral sense, just unenlightened, keeps running into what life keeps bringing to us so that we can become conscious of where we are the source of this conflict that we've blamed on everyone else.
Yep.
Now, in that moment of crisis, we fight to avoid it. We finally go through it, think we're going to die, come out, and whether it takes a week, a year, or 10 years, we look back and say, that was the greatest thing that could have happened to me. And if that's true, then here's all that I've been leading up to. Why in God's name do we look at life, and when it brings to us those walls that we've been crashing into, why don't we, for the first time in our lives, welcome those disturbances as the friends that they are, instead of running from them, believing that they are something fearful to be avoided?
You know, that made you bring up an interesting question.
Look, you want to know the real definition, as far as I'm concerned anyway, of what a fearless life is, Lance?
Go ahead.
To me, a fearless life, an authentically fearless life, is when a man or a woman knows, without thinking, that no matter what it is that happens to them for the good of them.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
That's when we no longer resist life, and when we no longer resist life, we no longer empower events outside of us to punish us as we try to change them, which can't be done.
And that also removes the negativity and the charge around those events.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You said it. You know, I have to have a completely new relationship with this situation, with this person, with this event, with this condition. What I have been and what I have done, it may have worked even up till yesterday.
Right, right.
You know, but today it doesn't work, and I can't lie about that to myself. So instead of resisting the moment, I'm going to do something that I've never done before consciously. I'm going to open myself up. I'm going to become passive practically, and I'm going to say, you know what? What is it that I have to learn about myself in this moment? Not what do I have to do to change you, not what I have to do to change the situation so it lines up better with what I want, but what is this moment teaching me about myself now? And the only way I can learn it is to shut up. That's the only way to learn it. We have to recognize that this big brain of ours, this divided mind, just wants to keep talking about what happened, what needs to be done, What can be made better? On and on it goes until one day we recognize that the mind that we're turning to save us is in fact what brought us into the situation that we now need salvation from.
Yep. Yep. I had a friend that was in his 60s, and he was kind of a mentor to me. And his favorite expression over the years was, your mind is out to get you.
Well, in a manner of speaking, it's true.
Yeah.
The mind, the problem with a statement like that is that when a mind is divided, which is what we're talking about, when a mind is divided, it always is going to put itself into conflict and then not know it's doing that. Let me bring this down a little bit so that listeners can understand it, because we're talking about fear. So fact number one, and Lance, challenge me if anything's not clear.
Okay.
Fact number one. No psychological fear of any kind exists without negative imagination. Fact number one. Now, what does that mean? It means that the event itself is not the source of my fear. And we know that's true because we can be with three other people, an event comes, two people have no reaction, and one person is trembling. So that means that there is something unique to the individual and the event that is producing the individual's fear. The fear is not an element of the event itself. Now, the reason that I said that fear is always the product of a negative imagination is because when a moment comes, and we've all seen this, who hasn't had an event come along and we go, oh my God, what's going to happen? Right or wrong?
Right.
What are we looking at, Lance, in that moment where we see an event as being fearful? What is the mind showing us?
Some kind of imaginary outcome.
Exactly. It isn't showing us what's happened. Rather, it's showing us all that may happen as a result of this.
Correct.
So my mind, this divided mind, has actually projected meaning upon the event.
Absolutely.
Now, the projected meaning is produced by imagination.
Correct.
Negative imagination.
Because
it's saying, this is bad. Look what's happened. Now, get ready for this. Because this is why the mind, a divided mind, acts against itself. So here's this mind, and it's asleep to itself, and it starts to paint this terrible, terrible picture about what may happen. And now the same mind that paints the negative picture, asleep to itself, looks at the picture it painted and goes, oh my God, look at that. What am I going to do? Now,
yes.
That's like going to an art museum, buying the picture on the wall that you hate most of all, taking it home, putting it on the wall, and hanging it there so you can get sick to your stomach every morning when you wake up.
Very good. Very, very colorful.
But
yeah,
that's it, isn't it?
Yes,
I mean,
it is it.
You see, that's why none of the answers that we presently live from with regards to what to do about our fear work. Because the fact of the matter is anything that we do to rid ourselves of a fear merely strengthens the sleeping relationship we have with this divided mind that first produces a negative picture that frightens it and then tries to protect itself from that image.
Yes, yeah, that makes total sense.
So if I really see that, Lance, do I need power? Do I need to manifest stuff to ensure my safety? Or do I need to wake up and realize that my mind has just created a haunted house and invited me in, and I went in without knowing it, and now I'm afraid of all that I just made out of life?
Well, that sounds like a better, more practical solution to me, and it only requires waking up and telling the truth.
Exactly. That's it. But the only thing, all that's required to be at peace is to wake up to what a mind divided does against itself.
Okay, now, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Since we do have a divided mind, literally divided into two halves, there's a male and a female side. One's intuitive and the other is logical or mental.
Right.
How do we, as divided ourselves into sexual beings, male and female, how do we internally begin to, and this might be a rhetorical question because I think you just answered it, how do we unite the two halves?
Well, there's the beauty of it. Number one, we have to be careful and kind of semantics here. Number one,
all right.
It isn't I that unites these divided parts.
Okay.
But those divided parts, by the very fact that we can discuss them the way we are, must live within something that is already whole.
Oh, okay.
See? And that's where awareness comes in. That's where in Christian terms, you know, Christ, I don't know, 22 times said, you know, wake up, watch. That's in the Buddhist tradition, mindfulness.
Yeah.
The whole idea that within us, within this world that we live in and in ourselves, exists a nature that is at once in that world, but not of it, which is also right out of Scripture. Awareness is that which this divided mind does what it does, but without awareness, the divided mind is controlling all that takes place and producing the sense of self that either says yes or no, this or that, fights with or embraces, because that's all it can do, on and off. But awareness holds on and off. Awareness holds yes and no, and not only does it hold it, but this awareness, I call it the presence moment, has intelligence in it. It has conscience in it. It is conscience.
Yeah.
And that conscience will not betray itself. It will not compromise itself, and it will not hurt another human being. So that's why when we talk about the need for waking up and letting go, what we're saying is that, look, we have a divided mind. It's part of the creation of this body, of a certain order of mind that's necessary for communication, for progeneration, you know, for the species and all that business.
Right.
But it's just an order of ourselves. It isn't who we really are. It is our body. We have something that is capable of being aware of all that that nature does and that isn't compromised by what that nature does. That's the whole point of it. Otherwise, we'd be in a terrible mess.
Hmm. So we have the capability of living in an awareness or a presence in the present moment.
Yes.
And that's connected to, would you say that that's connected to our ability to remain conscious?
It is consciousness. It is, look, you know, it's a tricky question in a way on the radio because, you know, consciousness, I'm looking out the window on my little porch here. I've got some bonsai trees. And just 10 feet past them is Angel, Sarah, and Gambi, some deer that I've known for years here.
Oh.
And you know, they have consciousness.
Yes.
But there's consciousness, and then there's consciousness. They are not aware of themselves, but they are aware of the relationship they have with the environment around them, and they react instinctively.
Mm.
Human beings are not only aware of the world outside of them, but they can be aware of what that world outside of them stirs within them. And the awareness of both worlds at the same time, Lance, awareness of the tone of my voice when I'm speaking to someone, and their response and the way I react to their response, is living in the exterior and interior world at the same time. And then it's not divided, is it?
No, not at all.
See? And that's what we're after. We're after understanding the necessity, and it is a necessity if we've lived at all, to start acting from a different order of ourselves, because we realize simply that when I react to your expression or the way the event went, and I just become the instrument of my own negative state, clearly I am asleep to myself, and I am allowing these negative forces to determine my relationship with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want negative states to determine my relationship with the world around me or for that matter, how I meet the world.
Right, right.
So how does that change? Well, I need to become aware of myself. I need to be present to myself in the moment where life presses in on me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the normal, the divided mind, here's life, it presses in on us, and as it does, the divided mind says, press back. Doesn't it?
Right.
It says the world is impinging upon your possibilities. The awakened mind, the awakened mind realizes that the world is not impinging upon you. The world is bringing to you a moment by which you can now see that whatever in you wants to push back is what has to go. It's not your friend. It's not protecting you. What it's really doing is limiting the possibilities you have to find a more adequate or creative response to that world mm-hmm. that seems to be changing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds a little bit like what you're describing has to do with the false personality and the ego versus the authentic soul within.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, good.
You know, if you were walking down the street and took a little left turn into a park, and you saw a group of eagles. And they were walking single file, and they all had on crash helmets, goggles, a rain suit, and were carrying a flight bag. You would realize that something had happened that was limiting the true nature of the original nature of these eagles, yeah?
Definitely.
Now, and you could even summarize it by saying, if you could, you say, you know, what are you doing, man? And then they say, well, we're on our way to a fish. We're on our way to go fish. And you say, well, what do you mean? And they pull out their fishing guide and say, this is, you know, we're following the fishing guide. And then you say, look, the goggles, the helmet, the rain gear, that's not original equipment, man. You don't need those things. Somewhere along the line, something has convinced you that you need something that you don't need. That's exactly what has happened to us. We carry all of these ideas about ourselves because we believe they're going to help us succeed. They are not helping us. I'm sorry?
And it's a lot of baggage.
It's nothing but baggage.
Yeah.
It's not original equipment.
Yeah.
And that's where fear comes in. Fear comes in when we believe that who we are depends upon something outside of us, then everything that happens to whatever it may be that we are attached to becomes something that we now feel we have to protect, so that our entire sense of self is connected to a circumstance or a condition that sits outside of us. Then our life becomes about protecting, trying to keep things from changing.
Yes.
Instead of recognizing that when things change, they are doing so that we can recognize the need to let go of what we have been and make the change accordingly.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Well, in the end, Lance, you know, I mean, we have become men and women who, without knowing it, have accepted a whole host of ideas and responsibilities that we didn't know we shouldn't have picked up. And that's what I said about the dissatisfaction thing. You know, it is not your responsibility to see that other people are happy. It is not your responsibility to see that the world turns the way you think it's supposed to turn. These are mistaken ideas that actually put us into conflict with people and the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a possession, what I call a possession mentality. And when we believe that we are the ones who possess the relationship, possess the authority, possess the wisdom, possess the things, we are literally tied to a way of life in which we have to do all that we can to keep anything from interfering with what we are dependent upon. The proper model doesn't preclude possession, but it begins with participation. It begins with recognizing that we are born into a world where we, each and every one of us, are given an individual story. We're literally created where our parents, through hereditary issues, through conditions, through our essence, we have a little story. It's called Lance. It's called Guy. But there is a bigger story than our little story. And the bigger story is the moment in which the little story is revealed to us as no longer being something that can go on as we've written it. Life is saying, hey, new storyline, new character is being asked for now. And when we refuse the new storyline, refuse the transformation of character, we do so because there is a part of us in this divided mind that fears no other story exists except for the little one that we have told ourselves. So life says, no, Lance, Guy, look, man, there's a bigger story. And the proof there's a bigger story is how bitter you are over what that person just said, how brokenhearted you are over what that person just did. Life is saying, the story you had worked up till now, let's get the new writer in. Meaning, let's let reality introduce us to new possibilities in our own character instead of being a captive of what it is that we have said life has to be and do in order for us to feel safe and secure. That's hell.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would totally agree with that one, too. So now, as people start to become a little bit more awakened and disenchanted with their jobs and their lives, how can we begin to use those situations as to awaken us?
Well, they are in and of themselves a wake-up call. You know, if I'm dissatisfied with myself, if I am in a relationship that's abusive, if I'm working at a job that I really don't like, if I am compelled in my social interactions to fawn in front of other people and I'm sick and tired of selling my soul for nothing, if I'm having moments like that, it's because life is saying, hey, let's wake up here. And instead of doing what we always do, which is repeating the pattern, let's just not repeat it. This is what, you know, this is really, in a way, Lance, the reason that so few people change spiritually is because when we actually know for a moment that we can't go on being and doing what we've been and done, for the first time in our life, we get to meet face to face the negative state that has driven us through that cycle. And there is something in us that says, well, I'm not supposed to feel this kind of pain. I'm not supposed to be unhappy this way. I'm supposed to be happy. But when we allow unhappiness to drive us, when we allow compulsion to tell us what we need to do to be free, then our hands are literally in the hands of a false god. We may not never think of it, but I tell you, when a person is suddenly struck with a fear, and they turn to themselves and ask themselves, what do I do about this fear? They have turned to fear for guidance.
Right. Exactly. It's become solid or solidified.
That's it. And so if I really see that I have made, in that moment, my God, fear, am I going to do it again?
Well, probably until you get smacked around enough and decide.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. I will repeat the behavior and repeat the behavior until one day I realize, you know, I'm getting ready to retaliate against this person because they keep being disrespectful. And one day, I get it. The problem is that I have an image of myself as someone who should never be spoken to that way, and that's where the source of the hatred is. Not with what they've done. It's inside of me, and I am no longer going to be the instrument of this hatred. I'm not going to allow this resentment to walk me one more time through a daydream or a recollection of some past painful moment so that once again I can try to figure out how to save myself. I'm not going to do it. And then that man or woman stands face to face for the first time aware of the negative state that formerly told them what to do about themselves. And here's the beauty of that. The reason the negative states go on and on is because we empower them through resistance. And when we stop resisting the negative state, we meet the state with the light of awareness, with a new awareness that in and of itself changes that state. It is the light that changes it. It is illumination that transforms us, not the path of domination by which we try to control these circumstances we find ourselves in. But we must bear it, Lance. We must learn to bear becoming conscious of these dark states that we have made gods for ourselves. And when we will bear the presence of that dark state, meaning bring the light of awareness into it, because that is what that dark state actually lives for in the first place, which is to be transformed, to go through that change, then we not only bring about the authentic transformation of that dark, unconscious aspect of ourselves, but lo and behold, the me, in quotes, that exits that moment is now a different order of self because I'm no longer living at the level of resisting these dark states. Can you see it?
Yeah, very good, very good.
This, very by the good. Way, is what it means that one must lose themselves in order to find themselves, that one must die in order to be reborn. This is the interior, the esoteric meaning of it.
And it probably, to the ego, it does feel like a death.
It will. I'm telling you factually that when you see who you can no longer be, and it's totally clear to you, then you will no longer lend your energy to that self that has been you up until now, and it will begin to die. And you will know that something is dying, but you will also know that as it's dying, something is being born. And what is being born is a whole new order of yourself that you couldn't have known, because formerly who you took yourself to be was nothing but the instrument of that unconscious nature.
Yes, right. Well said, my goodness. You should lead seminars. Oh, you do. Oh my! How important is some kind of spiritual anchor in all of this? Is it necessary to have some kind of spiritual awakening or connection for this process to occur, or is it? Can it occur without?
I think they're the same. No. I think they're the same thing, Lance.
If
you're asking me, does a man or a woman need to have belief? Some kind of belief system in order to go through this transformation? Absolutely not.
Right.
No, you don't need beliefs. What you need is willingness to be present to yourself.
Yes.
And in that willingness to be present to yourself, you enter into what I've said is this, I call it this presence moment, this living awareness. Now, you can call this living awareness what you want. Christ, okay. the divine mother, the Buddha nature, you know, Dharma. That makes no difference.
Right.
The fact is that it is ever present, it is eternal, it is compassionate, it is aware of itself and all that passes into it and through it, and its action upon whatever it becomes conscious of is to change what it becomes conscious of. So that is the discipline that isn't a path. It is the participation in a moment without the necessity of outlining for myself how I should participate.
Makes sense. That makes sense. That makes sense.
But there is a holiness in it, Lance. There is a perfect stillness, and it is love. It is love in the end that changes us. We just don't recognize it as being love because for the longest time we have enmity toward what wants to integrate us. Because isn't that ultimately what any moment of authentic change is? It's the integration of a nature that formerly didn't know itself and was divided against itself.
Yes, yes.
So this awareness, this light of awareness, is a force of integration. It doesn't produce the integration, but it reveals where we had empowered the disintegration, where we had empowered the divided nature and kept it alive through our own life force. So we withdraw that life force, we become properly passive to what is wrongly active in us, and through that process, what I would call this active passivity, lo and behold, that which was formerly divided is seen to be whole, and in that wholeness is love.
Well, Guy, this is a perfect spot to segue into our close and let people know how they can find out more about this process, because we've just barely touched upon a lot, but I'm sure that people are going to want to know more about how they can actually do this.
Well, it's
what
very
is your website for people to?
If you go to guyfinley.org, GUYFINLEY, guyfinley.org, you can right on the homepage. My foundation makes a host of free gifts available for anyone to get started.
Guyfinley.org. It's been wonderful talking with you again, and thank you for showing up on the show and for everything that you shared with us tonight.
Lance, I appreciate the opportunity, and I thank you for allowing it to happen.
All right. Good night, everybody, and good night, Guy.
Be well.